This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
No score in the hockey game. 14:42 remaining in this opening period. Scramble faceoff. And Lowry will send it out towards center ice for Tanev. Back for Lowry on the near side. He chugs in. Puts it into where the slot for Kopp moving in. Shoot, stop, rebound to the side of the net. They're banging away at it. They score! Put it on the near side for Tanev. He skips inside the zone. We'll get shoot. Score! Brandon Tanev with his second of the night. And Winnipeg has regained their lead. It's 2-1 for the Jets. How about that? Myers will steal a puck and send it all the way down the ice. The first one skipping inside that Boston end of Tanev. So Hudobin comes out to play it, rips it around the boards, gave it away to Tanev. Tanev curls back in by the net. Tanev a wraparound. He scores! Brandon Tanev with the hat-trick goal! His first in the National Hockey League! And it's raining hats! Winnipeg takes a 4-3 lead with a shorty.
It may have happened 24 hours ago, but still hard to believe that we saw it live and in person. The most unlikely Winnipeg Jets 2.0, maybe even Winnipeg Jets 1.0 hat trick goes to Brandon Tanev last night in the Jets 5-4 shootout victory over the Boston Bruins. They complete the six-game sweep, winning all six games on this most recent homestand. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to a late-night edition of NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg in studio with you on this Wednesday evening. What can you say about Brandon Tanev that hasn't already been said in the last 24 hours? That was one hell of a performance by the Jets number 13, came into the game with six career goals and got three last night to make nine career goals. Just a hell of a performance.
Yeah, if you want to do that maritime math, 33% of his career goals came last night. So, yeah. I mean, last night was Tanev time. And, you know, you talk about that game, guys. Jets fans are sure getting their entertainment value right now. And you had four games going to overtime, two straight games going to the shootout. And, you know, what an atmosphere there. The Jets, you know, worked to get that lead. And then, you know, the Josh Morrissey boarding major basically changed the outlook of that game. And then you obviously have the goal that is challenged and it's unsuccessfully challenged. And then the Bruins tie it up. And then, you know, now you're looking at a completely different game. So, you know, give the Jets a lot of credit for sticking with it. In a game in which, you know, I thought that they were the better team. I mean, six games, six wins, just so impressive considering that the Jets are dealing with some injuries here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Patrick Laine has not scored since he blocked that shot. So, you know, a really entertaining game and just nice for Brandon Tanev, a guy who's had some injury problems this year and a guy who you're not used to seeing score that many goals in a game.
Yeah, to say the least. I mean, yeah. Tremendous homestand, a lot of fun at the Bell MTS Place over the past few weeks. Yesterday, and going up against Nashville specifically, I mean, just some crazy games that fans just not complaining about any penny spent on those tickets. And I mean, you talk about yesterday's game, what more can you say? Brandon Tanev, that whole line of Kopp, Lowry, and Tanev did an absolutely remarkable job shutting down the Bergeron, Marchand, and what was started off as David Pastrnak, but he was moved off that line to maybe get him a couple different looks throughout the game by Bruce Cassidy. But I mean, a tremendous effort by that line to shut down one of the most potent two-way lines in the game.
To shut it down, and then also to score. Because, yeah. I mean, both of Tanev, the first two Tanev goals came against mm-hmm. the top line of the Boston Bruins, like you mentioned, which is, I mean, certainly not what the Jets expected, but the Jets will gladly accept last night.
Yeah, and then shout out to Connor Hellebuyck. Not his finest performance, an .875 save percentage, allowing four goals, but stopping Brad Marchand in the final 5 seconds of overtime after the Tyler Myers turnover. I mean, pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, and then he obviously makes all but one save there in the shootout period. But, you know, really impressive, guys, when you think about, you know, the Jets at home this year. I mean, we're just now expecting them to win every game mm-hmm. at home, but seven regulation losses mm-hmm. is truly incredible, almost bordering on absurd if you think about it.
That certainly is absurd. I mean, to go 37-2, I mean, it was back in the first year the Jets were back that they had this sort of tremendous home ice advantage. And then it had sort of dipped over the last number of years where they were good on home ice, but they were not what I would describe as dominant on home ice by any stretch. This year, to go 37-2, it's a tremendous record on home ice. I mean, yeah, they certainly are giving the hometown crowd their money's worth. And, you know, I thought last night entering the game that you might see a little bit of a dip. The team has clinched the playoff spot. The Bruins have clinched second spot, although they're tooth and nail with the Tampa Bay Lightning for top spot overall in the Atlantic Division. I thought you might see a little bit of a dip in the intensity or a dip in the play last night, and you certainly didn't see any dip in intensity. I mean, you had two teams that really don't have any animosity against one another. They only played one other time this year, and that was back in December. And from the outset, there was some solid hitting. Mark Scheifele went with a solid body check, and then he got a solid body check in return. Josh Morrissey's hit, which was a major, which was a dirty hit. Obviously no supplemental discipline, nor should there be, but that was certainly worthy of a 5-minute major. There was animosity. I think it's just two teams that each of them have designs on being Stanley Cup contenders that were doing battle with one another, and you can't help but get the intensity ramped up a little bit.
Right, and the only rough patch in that game was early in the third period when the Bruins scored those two power play goals and the 5-on-3, and I thought it was really impressive that Mark Scheifele sauced that beautiful pass to Joe Morrow after he was responsible for coughing up the puck to Ryan Donato on the first goal. And I also thought the goals were very timely. You think about Brandon Tanev's goal comes really early in the second period. What was it, 16 seconds into the second period? Yeah. And then after the Bruins tie it up, shortly after, Brandon Tanev scores the hat trick goal, right? So the Jets always had a response. So with that, with the exception of those two power play goals, that was really the only low point for me in that game. I thought the Jets were the better team. And I think what we've seen, guys, on this homestand is just a fast team that when they play a certain way, they're really unstoppable. And you look at their road record, and the Jets are a 500 team on the road. And if they can continue this, I mean, you're looking at, you know, possibly getting up to 115 points. And the unfortunate thing for the Jets is the Predators keep winning, and they just can't seem to get close enough to really pass them. Still 5 points back of the Predators. But when you look at the Jets' schedule coming up here, the next six games, they only have one game against a team that's currently in a playoff spot.
Toronto on Saturday night, of course. And if the Jets, I think, with one win, really, or one Minnesota loss, they're going to clinch second place. And that's when they can really begin to consider, I think, resting players and giving guys, you know, strategic nights off. Because as much as you'd like to say, yes, mathematically, they could still catch Nashville, I think it's pretty clear and pretty evident at this point in time, you're not catching Nashville. And so you just get those 2 points. Maybe it comes tomorrow against Chicago. Maybe Minnesota loses to Dallas, whatever it might be. And then you've mathematically clinched second spot, and you can start strategically giving some guys some days off, guys like Scheifele, who've been banged up, took a big hit, of course, last night. Guys like Brian Little, who moved back to center after he'd been playing some wing with Andrew Kopp up the middle. Just give those guys some nights off over the next 4, 5, 6 games and get ready for, of course, 2 weeks from today, which is the start of the NHL playoffs. Whether or not the Jets play on that Wednesday is still to be determined.
A couple guys that really stood out to me last night. As you mentioned him a little while ago, Ryan Donato, recently signed by the Bruins.
He's a player.
Man, shootout goal.
Yeah.
And that dances Joe Morrow for the backhander, which was a gorgeous backhand. Mm-hmm. And Joe Morrow actually really impressed me. Solid game, a lot of minutes, playing a lot of time, and just looked really sturdy out there. He looked responsible, he looked poised, and giving up a 4th-round pick for this guy for the insurance that it was supposed to be, we didn't know if he was even going to play a game entering this final stretch. Mm-hmm. Another solid acquisition for this team with regards to depth.
This Bruins team is really good,
and
we've known that for quite some time, and the Jets learned last night that if they do end up meeting the Bruins in the Stanley Cup Final, you can't take penalties against this team. And this is a team without Charlie McAvoy right now, without Zdeno Chara, without David Backes.
Without Rick Nash.
Right, and sure, the Jets have injuries as well. Jacob Trouba, Dmitry Kulikov, Toby Enstrom, Matt Hendricks. I mean, there are guys out of the lineup right now. But
the Bruins have more impactful players, than the Jets do.
I would agree with that. So, a fantastic game, and we've been really treated to some fantastic hockey here on this homestand. I mean, what more can you ask for? You know, the Jets clinch the playoff spot in the shootout, and then they continue it again by winning in the shootout. And the overtime has been a bit of a bugaboo for the Jets this year. It's really been only the second half of the season where they've started to win some games in the overtime period. So a very special night for Brandon Tanev. Also, Blake Wheeler picks up his 600th career point. So a lot of milestones.
I got to ask you guys this quickly before. Well, we got a little bit of time, actually. The decision by the officials. So the official who's closest to the goal says no goal. Doesn't really give any indication. Or actually says no goal. I'm talking about the first goal of the game. Mm-hmm. Brandon Tanev's first goal.
It was clearly a goal.
Could you say that it was clear? I'll tell you what.
It was a goal.
But the first official, the guy who's closest to the goal, says no goal.
I don't know if he says no goal or he just... I watched it today a bunch, and he just kind of opens his arms. He's not like...
Live, it seemed, Drew, that one referee called it a goal and the other waved it off.
Well, right, but the one who called it a goal was the back official. And if you're the back official, you're the back linesman, or the linesman on that play, you can't tell me that you have a better view of the action than the front official who either said no goal or really didn't give any demonstrative signal whatsoever. And that's the only reason. Then they all got together and the back official won the argument, saying it's definitely a goal. And that's the only reason why the goal counted, because there was no visual evidence to overturn it. If the call on the ice from the official who's closest to the play is the one that stands, then it's a 0-0 game. I don't love... I thought there were some troubles with the officiating last night.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, Drew. I mean, there was some confusion there. And then when we saw the video replay, I mean, it wasn't clear at first from certain angles whether the puck crossed the line. But when you saw the angle where you could see that white space and you could see that the puck was between Khudobin's glove and the goal line, to me, that was the one that clinched it. And that was the one that ultimately determined that it was a goal.
Well, I mean, I like that they didn't change the call that they made on the ice. I just don't like how they made the call on the ice initially. I think that there's no way that back official should be able to overrule the official closest to the play. I think that's probably bad communication between the officials in coming to that determination. I mean, obviously Jets fans and Brandon Tanev are happy with the result, but I thought it was just sort of an odd sequence of events that back officials would overrule the front official on that instance.
Not an easy night for the officials, because then, of course, the offside challenge on the Bruins' power play and putting them in another tight position, which went Boston's way, so maybe
you know, karma. Karma says karma, it's Kramer, all going to balance back. It's all going to balance out at the end. Obviously, a decision that Paul Maurice probably doesn't make in the playoffs.
For sure.
Given that it's a 5-on-3 if he's wrong.
The repercussions are too high if this was a quote-unquote meaningful game.
I would agree with that. In any event, it doesn't matter for the Winnipeg Jets. They finished the homestand with the 6-0-0 record, solidly in second place in the Central Division. They head out on the road for 4 games now, starting tomorrow night in Chicago. When we come back, we're going to talk about those Blackhawks, talk about tomorrow night's contest, and talk about potential changes coming to the Blackhawks as they wind down their regular season. Not playoff bound this year for the first time in a long time. Talk about any changes and what the future holds for the Chicago Blackhawks. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The failing of this team this year has been because Taves and Kane and Seabrook and Keith and some of the core veteran guys. Brandon Saad, and Saad's not an older guy. I mean, Saad's a young guy. He's 25 years old. They traded Panarin for Saad, and Saad hasn't played worth a lick to what he's capable of doing.
TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie, that was from our sister station in Vancouver. Bobby Mack was on air there, and they asked him about the Chicago Blackhawks and their struggles this season, a disappointing season coming to an end in the Windy City. No playoffs, no springtime hockey in Chicago this year. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Asore, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. As I mentioned, no playoffs this year for the Blackhawks. Definitely a disappointing season. Is it going to result in significant changes, Ezzy? Do you think this Blackhawks team that we see right now and the Blackhawks management group that we see right now is going to be the same team, same management, same coach, same general manager that comes into training camp next September?
I do think the Bowman-Quenneville regime will still be around next year. You know, you look at the Hawks season, and I've said this many times on the show before, I think if Corey Crawford is healthy, it's a completely different year for the Chicago Blackhawks. And since they last played the Winnipeg Jets, they've lost 5 of 6 games. And really, for me, Sean, the story of this Blackhawks team is not only Corey Crawford, but you just didn't get enough secondary scoring for Patty Kane, Jonathan Toews, and Alex DeBrincat, who's been an absolute revelation in his first year in the National Hockey League. So, you know, I'm not one of those people that think that big managerial changes are coming. I think you're going to see personnel changes. I think the Hawks will look at trading a guy like Artem Anisimov. But Joel Quenneville, I think, has proven to be one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League. And Stan Bowman, we know how good of a job he's done year after year reshaping his roster when it's been up against the salary cap. So I don't think those two individuals are in jeopardy of losing their job.
Sean, same question to you. Do you think it's the same? I mean, I'll let you get in here because I have a slightly different opinion than my colleague on my immediate left here.
I have a very similar opinion to my colleague on my right here.
Okay.
I do think the Quenneville-Bowman regime will last another season. It's hard for me to think that they foresaw such an intense drop-off in the way that the Hawks would play and the results. And, you know, you were talking about Corey Crawford, and you can't predict injuries, obviously. So I just feel that you kind of take, maybe this is their one step back to kind of reassess, and then you begin your two-step forward procedure. I mean, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews are some of the most elite players in the game. You got some young talent, like Vinny Hinostroza comes to mind, and Alex DeBrincat, obviously Nick Schmaltz, some good young players, maybe shoring up a little bit of defense, maybe get a couple more veteran defensemen that can provide a little bit more stability on the back end. No offense to, you know, Eric Gustafson, Jan Ruda, Connor Murphy, Jordan Osterley, not really getting the job done. But again, you can't really fault the defense when your number one goaltender is missing the majority of time. But I think that from a management standpoint, it's going to be pretty similar heading into next year. Probably some different player personnel, I'd assume.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to disagree with both you guys in one front. I do not think that Joel Quenneville will return as the Chicago Blackhawks head coach. I think at some point in time, just a coaching relationship with a team runs its course. You've heard scuttlebutt over the years that him and Stan Bowman don't necessarily see eye to eye. You know, if you recall correctly, Quenneville skipped the Friday of the NHL draft last season because he was unhappy with the decision to trade Nicklas Chalmerson to the Arizona Coyotes. He was unhappy when, in the offseason, Mike Kitchen, his close friend, was fired from behind the bench. So I think that you're at the point, and this seems like a decent sort of breaking off point between Joel Quenneville and the Blackhawks front office, that it's just, okay, you know, we've had a long run together. We've had a great deal of success together. But I think it's time maybe that Stan Bowman wants a new voice in the room, and maybe Joel Quenneville might also maybe be burnt out with some of the decisions that Stan Bowman's made that he probably, I would suspect, does not necessarily agree with.
You know, earlier we talked about Brent Seabrook, and he's under contract for another 6 years.
Crazy.
After this year. And with the exception of Patrick Sharp, I mean, the majority of this team is still under contract. Sure, you've got Anthony Duclair, who's a pending RFA, and you've got a few other pending RFAs. I believe Thomas Yurko is also a pending RFA. But when you look at this roster, I think it's still a very talented roster, but I think you need to bring in another goaltender. I think you need to bring in a top four defenseman. I think you could probably bring in at least a couple of wingers, probably a top six winger preferably, but it's a very deep roster. As far as, you know, what happens with Joel Quenneville, I mean, it's all speculation at this point, but this is certainly not acceptable for the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, this team is used to being in the playoffs year after year, and not just being in the playoffs, but going far in the playoffs. So whether it's the coach that loses his job or, mm-hmm. or whether it's big changes coming on the ice, changes are coming.
To your point, Izzy, about them needing a top four defenseman, I certainly agree with you on that front. This is a team that would be desperate to see an increase in the salary cap. I mean, the salary cap right now, let's say it's $75 million next year. Well, the Blackhawks already have 70, you know, almost 70, just over, pardon me, just over $70 million in contracts on their books for next season. That doesn't give a ton of flexibility. That certainly probably won't bring you in a top four defenseman via the free agency market. Maybe they make a trade or whatever else to get a top four D that way. But if the salary cap all of a sudden goes up to $78 million or if it goes up to $80 million, all of a sudden, you got a lot more money that the Blackhawks can play with, and then that maybe lessens the load a little bit on Duncan Keith. It bumps Brent Seabrook down to probably a position that he's better off playing at this stage in his career. Forget about what his actual contract value is. C'est la vie with his contract dollars. I mean, it's obviously too much, but like I said, c'est la vie. And then maybe you can get it going. But the defense as currently constructed is, I think, your most problematic part for your Blackhawks. They have some young talent up front. They just signed Dylan Sakura. He's going to come in and, you know, try and crack their lineup next year. You mentioned Vinny Hinostroza, of Alex DeBrincat, who's had a great year. So they have some talent up front. It's the talent on the back end that's really hurting them at this point in time.
The Hawks will benefit from having more salary cap room, but they have to bring in the right players.
Well, obviously.
And that goes without saying. But when you're talking about, you know, this team, sure, everyone can see that you need to bring in a mobile puck-moving defenseman, but you also had to have a capable backup mm-hmm. to replace Corey Crawford. That's my issue. I mean, mm-hmm. everyone knows that this team missed a top-five goalie in their lineup, but Anton Forsberg, J.F. Berube, Jeff Glass, they weren't able to at least give them adequate enough goaltending to stay competitive. And that's nothing against those three goaltenders, but the goaltending was just not good enough on a night-in, night-out basis. Mm-hmm. And they have to bring in more secondary scoring, as we talked about. There's a lot of work to do here because it's not just on defense. You know, there does need to be some reshaping and restructuring on this roster.
Given some of the decisions that Stan Bowman has made that you could, to some extent you could say have backfired, maybe the Seabrook contract extension, the trading of Tuvo Teravainen to get out from under the Brian Bickle contract, the Chalmerson trade to the Arizona this past offseason, are you surprised he doesn't get more heat on him? Maybe, you know, granted, we're not in the Chicago market, so we don't necessarily know if there is that heat. But it seems from an outsider's perspective that Stan Bowman sort of skates a little bit under the radar of those GMs who are allegedly on the hot seat.
Well, Bowman's got three Stanley Cup rings as general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks, right? And this is a team that won the division last year. So for me, this is a blip as opposed to a downward spiral, if you want to call it that. I mean, I picked Chicago to be a playoff team this year. I know a lot of people didn't, and that's probably because the Central Division is so competitive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if you make the right moves, I mean, this isn't a complete rebuild here. I mean, you've still got Patrick Kane, mm-hmm. Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith. Corey Crawford is still an excellent goaltender, obviously.
If
you know, he has to make a full recovery here. You know, Anthony Duclair is a nice player. I mean, we talked about Alex DeBrincat. He's top 10. He's even better than that, top five in NHL rookie scoring right now. So you've got a lot of talent up and down the roster. You just have to complement those pieces, in my opinion.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Curtis Pashelka. San Jose Sharks are playing some deadly hockey.
Oh, yeah.
They've won 8-1-1 in their last 10 games. They lost in overtime last night to the St. Louis Blues. Talk about the San Jose Sharks as they head into the playoff stretch drive, five games to go in their regular season. Curtis Pashelka joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
From the San Jose Mercury News, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Curtis Pashelka. Curtis, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, sure, no problem. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Good, good, good.
That's good. Curtis, obviously we brought you on to talk about the Sharks, the team you cover. And, you know, obviously they lost last night in overtime to the St. Louis Blues, which snapped just an incredible streak that the Sharks were on, 8-1-1 in their last 10. And I was just saying before we brought you on that the Sharks sort of, they've been a playoff team for the majority of the year, but they've sort of been under the radar. Does this recent hot stretch that they've been on, is the recent play since the trade deadline in particular, maybe change the ceiling for this San Jose Sharks team as we enter the playoffs?
Yeah, it kind of, like you said, they were under the radar for so long, but after this win streak and, you know, the fact that they've, you know, pretty much guaranteed themselves a playoff spot at this point, it's not 100%, but, you know, they'd have to completely collapse for not to get enough to get in the playoffs. But, yeah, their profile's been raised a little bit, and I think a lot of people are saying, well, maybe this Sharks team can make a run. You know, you look at who they might play in the first round, second, it's either going to be Anaheim or Los Angeles, for the, you know, more than likely it's going to be one of those two teams. And then, you know, potential date with Vegas in the second round. And, you know, Vegas is a little bit of a question mark. We don't normally know how this team's going to respond to sort of playing in a playoffs. Are they going to stay at the same level they've been through, you know, throughout most of the season, or do maybe they kind of revert back to what people expected them to be? So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's, you know, they're not a favorite to come out of the Pacific Division, but, you know, you can't completely count them out just because the way they've been playing recently.
Curtis, Joe Thornton's been out of the lineup since late January. He actually went out of the lineup against the Winnipeg Jets. How close is Joe Thornton to returning to the lineup, and how are the Sharks going to ease him back in?
Well, no one's 100% sure when Joe Thornton's going to be able to return, and you know, I think that includes Joe himself. I'm sure he'd love to get in one or two games, you know, before the end of the regular season. I just don't know how realistic that is. He talked last week, you know, for the first time to the media for the first time since he was injured. And he was saying, you know, I could come back mid-April. I could come back mid-May. He doesn't really know how the knee's going to respond over the next couple of weeks. So, it's tough to say when he's going to return. But, you know, in his absence, I think, you know, the Sharks have gotten some pretty good goaltending. You know, they've kind of hung around that way. And obviously the trade for Evander Kane has kind of really breathed new life into those lineups. So they've gotten by without him. And right now, I think, you know, it's kind of a bonus. They look at it as a bonus if they got Joe Thornton back at some point in the playoffs.
Curtis, just looking at the conclusion of the month here, and since March 12th, other than a couple games, the Sharks have scored 3 goals or more in every single game. Is this just a case of a very potently offensive team firing at all cylinders at the right time of the year right now?
You know, I think there's a little bit of that. Maybe you could say that they were due. You know, after, you know, for the first 3.5 months, there was kind of a, you know, some question mark. You know, they were near the bottom of the league in 5-on-5 scoring. It was kind of their power play that got hot. You know, at some point early in the season, that kind of helped them win a lot of games. I think two things. It's a matter of becoming a deeper team, more of a 4-line team. You know, you insert Kane on that top line, and that helps out Joe Pavelski. That moves guys down into the proper slots. And so there's that. And then other players kind of raising their level a little bit. You know, I like Tomas Hertl's having a really good year. Mikael Bakker's not a great year, but certainly better than it was last year. And so, young guys like Timo Meier and Kevin LeBanc, they're chipping in goals too. So it's a deeper team than it was. And I think right now, the offense is they're just playing with a lot of confidence right now. And the offense has kind of come along with that.
Curtis Pashelka is our guest on NHL This Week. Curtis covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, you mentioned him in a couple of different answers, so we have to ask about Evander Kane. You acquired for a very reasonable cost at the trade deadline. Second-round pick, it could be a conditional first-round pick. An average prospect going back to the Buffalo Sabres. Evander's been great for the Sharks. He's got 14 points in 14 games played, 9 goals in those 14 games. Why, from your perspective, has he fit so seamlessly into the San Jose Sharks lineup?
Well, I think, you know, Pete DeBoer has preached, for a long time that he wants his wingers to play in physical game, win battles along the wall, and kind of play in more straight lines. And I think Evander Kane really kind of fits that description to a T. He's a guy who's come in and brought, you know, speed, brought some skill, and maybe a little bit of grit too, maybe a little bit of a bite factor to this lineup as well. So he's checked a lot of boxes here, and obviously he's a highly motivated player right now. He's looking for a new contract this summer. He wants to demonstrate that he's a good teammate, that he's matured quite a bit, and he can be counted on to produce when crunch time. And obviously he's looking forward to, you know, getting to the playoffs for the first time in his career. That's a huge motivating factor for him as well. So you kind of add all that up Sharks got a, like you said, a really good deal here at the trade deadline. And maybe it's the difference between them just getting to the playoffs and making a run. We'll kind of have to wait and see.
Curtis, Logan Couture is at 31 goals right now. He's got a good chance to best his career high of 32 goals, which came in his second career NHL season. And Logan Couture is a guy that year after year is depended on for the Sharks. But do you think he gets enough credit for how good of a goal scorer he is for this team?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's like you look at, he always gets smashed up against the team's, you know, best opposing center. If you're in the Pacific Division, that means going against the Kopitars, that means going against McDavid's, those type of players. But you're right, it's kind of like his offense just kind of gets lost in the shuffle a little bit. Part of that has to do with injuries. You know, he's missed significant time the last couple of years with the injuries. You know, first he had a broken bone in his ankle and /ankle leg 2 years ago, and then last year he missed time, you know, towards the end of the regular season after he got hit in the face with the puck. So that kind of contributes to it as well. And, you know, when you've got huge personalities like Joe Thornton and Brent Burns on the same team, and, you know, other goal scorers like Joe Pavelski and last year Patrick Marleau, you're right. Couture gets lost in the shuffle a little bit, but this year he's really taking his game to the next level, and you can certainly argue he's been the team's best player for the last 5.5 months.
Curtis, I'm glad you mentioned Patrick Marleau. He scored his 25th goal tonight in a Leafs 4-3 win over the Panthers. Leafs clinching a playoff spot in the process of that win. I'm sure you've seen plenty of Patrick Marleau with his time in the Sharks. Are you surprised with not only the success he's having in Toronto, but the impact he's having on that team and how maybe the young guys are, you know, there's so many reports about how they gravitate towards him as more of a leader and I don't want to say a father figure, but someone they can really rely on with regards to learning their way through the league and just kind of a veteran showing them the way?
Yeah, I think that's the part that maybe surprises me a little bit. Obviously he's so consistent year in and year out when it comes to his goal scoring. You know, it has trailed off a little bit here over the last 3-4 seasons. But still, I mean, you can pretty much put in the bank 20, 25, even up to 30 goals each season for Patrick Marleau. And, you know, here in San Jose, he didn't have to be that mentor role as much. I mean, certainly he's helped young guys throughout their career. You know, Joe Pavelski, when he's breaking in, Logan Couture has talked about him a lot, quite a bit in the past, about how he learned so much about what it took to be an NHL player from Patrick Marleau. And so, but you don't really, he doesn't really boast about it. He's not really a boastful guy. So you don't, you know, he's not a rah-rah cheerleader type player. So when he goes to Toronto and assumes that more of that role than maybe he did in San Jose, I mean, that shows why the Leafs were willing to give him, you know, a 3-year deal. And not just because he's been so consistently healthy over the course of his career, because how much he would mean to that team in terms of being setting the right example, you know, being a guy who does things the right way. You hear Mike Babcock talk about that a lot, quite a bit, about Patrick Marleau is a guy who does things the right way pretty much all the time. And so that's part of that he's kind of come out of his, I don't know, come out of his shell, but just a guy who's willing to sort of assume that role and be that type of player that the Leafs needed him to be this season.
Curtis Pashelka, our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the San Jose Sharks as they head into the playoff stretch drive, getting ready for the playoffs, which begin 2 weeks from today. Curtis, you never want one of your teammates to be injured, but since Joachim Ryan has been out of the lineup on the Sharks' back end, it's given Paul Martin an opportunity to sort of reaffirm himself as a Sharks defenseman. He's played the last 6 games for the Sharks after not playing any since December the 7th. How has Paul Martin looked in these, you know, handful of games while Ryan has been on the shelf?
Well, I think, you know, the first game or two back, you can certainly tell that there was a lot of rust, just as far as his timing goes, and being getting used to playing, regular minutes again this season. But you know, as the games have gone on here, I think he's been much more comfortable back there. being paired with Brent Burns again, those two go together pretty well. So, I mean, they know how to play with each other, certainly over, the last couple of years being with each other. So, he's looked better and better, and it's going to be interesting. We asked Pete DeBoer before the Sharks left for their road trip, if Paul Martin, once Joakim Ryan gets back healthy, can Paul Martin, is this going to be a tough decision for the coaching staff as far as who gets to stay in the lineup, assuming everybody else stays healthy? And I think Pete DeBoer's answer was more or less, hey, we're just taking it game by game, wouldn't commit one way or another, just kind of saying we're going to take it game by game and put the best lineup on the ice that we think is going to win that night. So it kind of sounds like the more Paul Martin's able to stay in there, the more maybe Pete DeBoer might be willing to stick with him once the playoffs start. It'll be interesting to see see what happens there.
Curtis, this past weekend, the Sharks honored Jonathan Chichu, who had that great 56-goal season back in 2005-2006. What was that like to see Jonathan Chichu honored for a great career with the Sharks?
Yeah, I mean, the fans really gravitate to players, of that era, sort of the mid-2000s teams. The likes of, say, a Mike Ricci or Evgeny Nabokov, obviously Jonathan Chichu with his terrific season. The fans really have an affinity for those players of that era who really kind of took the team sort of to the next level. They hadn't been to a conference finals for the first, I think, maybe 10, 12 years of their existence, and they finally make it in 2004 and then, win the President's Cup in 2008 and those type of things. And so, yeah, I mean, I wasn't covering the team back then, but you certainly got to get a feel for how much the fans really loved seeing Jonathan Chichu. The more you get away from that 56-goal season, the less it seems like that someone's gonna break that record one day. I mean, they've got some pretty good goal scorers on this team, but getting 50 or 55 or even 56, that's gonna be a tough order. So, like, the more we get away from that record, the greater it kind of seems from today's perspective, anyway.
Curtis Pashelka covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this evening to talk about the Sharks.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Curtis. We'll do it again real soon. When we come back, we're going to talk about one Connor McDavid. Should he be a Hart Trophy finalist now that he's cracked the 100-point and 40-goal mark? You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
And here's McDavid making a steal on Milano. 2-on-1, shorthanded. Nugent Hopkins back to McDavid. Backhander score! Shorthanded goal for Connor McDavid. It's 2-0. He's already got a goal and an assist, and he's just become the first Oiler to score 40 goals since Peter Klima 27 years ago.
How have they not had a 40-goal scorer in 27 years?
Because they don't develop their first-round picks?
Well, they trade them away, I guess. That, obviously, from last night's Oilers-Blue Jackets game. The Oilers jumped out to an early 3-0 lead, only in typical Oiler fashion, to watch it dissipate very quickly and end up losing 6-3 to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Thomas Vanek with the hat trick for the Blue Jackets. He's obviously now the front runner for the Hart Trophy at the end of the season. My tongue firmly in cheek as I say that. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. So, Mr. Ginsburg, 40 goals and counting, 102 points and counting. Certainly not a playoff team. That's been well affirmed at this point in the season. Is Connor McDavid, given the struggles of the Edmonton Oilers, given the lack of on-ice success of the Edmonton Oilers this season, do his personal accomplishments overshadow what the team has done? Is he one of your Hart Trophy nominees?
I think he has to be in the conversation. I don't know if he's a finalist for me, but if he isn't a finalist for me, he's really close. And we have to talk about what Connor McDavid is doing right now. And I was doing a little research here for the segment. And, you know, the numbers that stand out to me, not only has he reached 102 points, and he's well on his way to getting to 110 points if he continues at this pace.
Mm-hmm.
9 goals and 21 points in his last 10 games. So that's over 2 points a game. That's 2.1 points a game. In half of those games, so in 5 games, he's had 3 or more points. The stat that stands out to me is 80 even strength points. That's number one in the NHL. The next closest to Connor McDavid is Nathan MacKinnon with 62. So he has 18 more even strength points than the next player. Truly incredible. Another stat. On February 1st, Connor McDavid was 10 points behind Nikita Kucherov, ranked 13th overall. That's Connor McDavid was ranked 13th overall. Now he is 6 points ahead of Nikita Kucherov. Truly incredible. We're talking about 2 months. He's made up 16 points.
All said and done, Sean, they're not a playoff team. They're one of the biggest disappointments in the league this season.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the most outstanding player. It's the most valuable player. And there is a distinction between the two. Can you be a nominee for the NHL's most valuable player if your team sucks?
This is going to sound super harsh, but I don't think you can. What value are you providing the team? I get it. You're scoring a ton of points, and you are probably one of the most entertaining players to lace them up and get on the ice ever.
Yeah.
But where's your team?
Well,
what,
I mean,
what are these helping the team move towards?
Well, the devil's advocate would say, well, if he was having an average season, rather than the team being 34, 37, and 6, the team might be the Buffalo Sabres and 24, 40, and 12. How many of those 74 points can be attributed directly to Connor McDavid? I think I would argue, and I think a lot of people would say, well, a lot of those points, but it's not a... You can't.
But what value do those points provide if you're not in the postseason?
Well, I mean, the flip side to that is how much further out of the playoffs would they be if it wasn't for Connor McDavid? And I don't know the answer to it. It's a real dilemma. I mean, if the vote was for the most outstanding player, then he wins it. And I don't think anybody would argue that Connor McDavid hasn't been the most outstanding player this season.
But, oh, yeah. I'm not arguing that.
And he's certainly the most valuable player to the Edmonton Oilers.
For sure.
But is he the most valuable player of all the valuable players in the entire NHL?
He was last year. We should also mention...
Well, last year they made the playoffs.
The last time a player won the Hart Trophy when his team didn't make the playoffs was exactly 30 years ago. And that was, of course, number 66.
Mario Lemieux.
Big Mario.
So that was 30 years ago. And
didn't he have like 76 goals that year or something crazy?
I think he lapped the field. I mean, that, you know, that he was so far and away ahead of the competition. I mean,
that's what the argument is now, that he has lapped the field. And, you know, another stat that I wanted to bring up, since February 1st, McDavid has 48 points at even strength 40, and the next closest player is Evgeny Malkin with 38 points, 29 of those even strength. So, I mean, nobody's really close to what he's done over the last couple months.
Mm-hmm.
I know what the argument is, though. How can you really be valuable if your team isn't in a playoff spot? I understand that argument, but I think at a certain point you have to say, this guy is the most valuable player in the NHL, and if he was surrounded with the right players, this team would be a playoff team.
Absolutely. I don't think anybody is... nobody would argue with that. And certainly the biggest drawback that Connor McDavid's experiencing right now is the fact that Peter Chiarelli is the general manager of his hockey team. I mean, the boneheaded move after boneheaded move is costing Connor McDavid... you know, it's costing him probably Stanley Cup opportunities, because Peter Chiarelli doesn't know how to form a roster in this day and age in the NHL. So, you know, that's certainly the biggest hindrance facing Connor McDavid. You know, right now I think he's got to be a finalist. I just think the, you know, 102 points probably makes him a finalist, and it probably makes him a finalist with Kucherov. But I think if I had to vote right now, it's going to Nathan MacKinnon.
I don't know how Taylor Hall and Nathan MacKinnon aren't both finalists, especially if both of those teams make the playoffs, right? And that only leaves one spot. So if Hall and MacKinnon get two of those three spots,
sure.
Then you got to think Kucherov gets the other spot over McDavid.
I don't know if I'd give it to Hall. I know how valuable Hall has been, but has Hall been more valuable to the Devils than Blake Wheeler has been to the Jets?
I don't think so.
I mean, and there's no right answer to it.
There's a reason why you have a voting process, right? Because your three finalists would look a lot different than my three finalists, right?
But I'm saying
so. You're right. There are no right and wrong answers. This is a year in which there are possibly 12 to 15 that you could argue should be one of the three finalists.
Yeah, you can certainly make an argument for a lot of different players. From my perspective right now, I think it's McDavid just because of, you know, you crack the 100-point barrier, you get, you know, he's the best player, best offensive player in hockey, and so I think he gets one of the nominations for that purpose, despite the fact that his team sucks. Nathan MacKinnon is the only guy who's averaging more points per game played than Connor McDavid. That's played a significant number of games. I'm talking about a guy who's played four games and has 6 points. I mean, let's not get carried away with that guy.
If Colorado misses the playoffs, do you give Nathan MacKinnon one of the three finalist spots? I mean, it's a tough question,
right? It's a tough question.
Same thing goes for Taylor Hall, right? The Panthers can catch the Devils.
Yeah.
I mean, the Panthers lost tonight, but the Panthers can catch the Devils. I mean, if the Devils miss the playoffs, can you make that argument that Taylor Hall should be one of the three finalists?
If the Devils miss the playoffs, is Blake Wheeler more valuable to the Jets than Taylor Hall was to the Devils? And I'm not just saying that as a homework.
And the counter argument to that is the Jets have more talent than the Devils do, and they certainly do.
Just circumstantially, with everything that's happened here, with the moving of the center and all the storylines.
Yeah, I mean, Blake Wheeler's certainly valuable, but I mean, at the same point in time, you know, Andre Kopitar could very well be ahead of both Blake Wheeler and Taylor Hall on your MVP ballot, if you have one. I mean, we're the Kings this year. Without Andre Kopitar.
He's amazing.
He's been absolutely fantastic. Jeff Carter has been out for the majority of the season in Los Angeles. I mean, this is a team that doesn't have a ton of offense to begin with. Andre Kopitar has more points than both Taylor Hall and Blake Wheeler this season.
What about a name we haven't even really mentioned aside from the comparison I did with Connor McDavid? Evgeny Malkin. What does Evgeny Malkin have to do to become a Hart Trophy finalist?
Great point.
The guy has been absolutely on fire the last 3 months.
Yeah. It is one of the most... I mean, there's a reason why...
I said that 2 weeks ago. I think this is the best Hart Trophy race we've seen maybe in... Yeah. At least 5 years.
And there's a reason why we talk about it every 2 weeks, because it's that fascinating of a race where, I mean, there's really no wrong answers, and there's a whole hell of a lot of right answers, so it makes for pretty good talk radio.
There's going to be at least three or four players that aren't finalists that probably should have been finalists, right?
If the ballot was five or six guys as opposed to three finalists, it'd be a lot easier this year. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Jeff Patterson from our sister station, TSN 1040 in Vancouver, talk a little bit about the Canucks as they wind down the year, and talk about the league in general with Jeff. You're listening to NHL This Week. Hour number two coming up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website that has the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is available at IllegalCurve.com. From TSN 1040 in Vancouver, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Jeff Patterson. Jeff, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys, how are you doing?
Doing very well, Jeff. How about yourself?
Yeah, not bad.
That's good. Another five games to go in undoubtedly a disappointing Vancouver Canucks season. Not going to be a playoff team yet again out on the left coast of Canada. If I'm a Canucks fan, Jeff, what am I taking solace in having, in the 77 games that have come and gone this season?
That Brock Besser arrived on the scene. He carried the hopes and dreams of the city and its fan base for much of the season until he was hurt on March the 5th. And they weren't going to make the playoffs then, but their season really ended the night that He hurt his back against the New York Islanders and has missed 11 games and is out the rest of the season, and he's one of many on the shelf now. I mean, they're really just playing out the string. They had 10 guys in their lineup last night against Anaheim making less than $1 million, so that kind of gives you a sense of where they are just filling out a roster right now. But Brock Besser had a terrific season, 29 goals and 55 points, and it looks like he's going to lead this team in scoring, which speaks to other issues of significance that, you know, there's in the supporting cast here yet, but Brock Besser kind of leading this wave of, you know, prospects that the Canucks haven't had in a bunch of years. Elias Pettersson, the fifth overall pick last year, should make this team out of camp next year. Adam Gaudette, the leading scorer in the NCAA and the likely Hobie Baker winner, is going to debut in the Canucks lineup tomorrow night. So, you know, that's something to look forward to above and beyond. Connor McDavid coming to town. So, you know, there are some pieces of the puzzle here, but it is all about the future because for a third straight year, right now, it's just a countdown to the draft lottery.
Jeff, sticking with Brock Besser, and you mentioned that he's not going to be returning to the Canucks lineup this season after suffering that really scary injury after he collided with Cal Clutterbuck. Is he recovering well from that injury? Is he still on track to be better over the next couple weeks? Is there a chance that he might represent Team USA at the World Hockey Championship, or is he maybe just going to, you know, enjoy his spring a little bit earlier than he would have liked?
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance that he will play hockey again this year. So I think that rules him out for the world. So it's been interesting because of what he has meant to this team and the way the city has glommed onto him. It's been 3 weeks since he's been injured, and the Canucks have a policy of not making injured players available to the media. But this is a different case, and I mean, this is the face of the franchise moving forward. I'm a little surprised that, you know, after a week or two, as he started his road to recovery, that they didn't prop him up just to let the fans know how he's doing and let the media know how he's doing as well. He's around the rink, apparently, but we haven't had a chance to talk to him. Requests have been made, so I can't really bring you up to speed a whole lot on his recovery other than I am told, you know, he's sort of doing baby steps here and is off the couch. He took a couple of weeks there just to sort of rest up, but, you know, it's a cracked bone in his lower back that will require some time, but we're led to believe that he'll make a full recovery. So that is the update, but I'm certainly not expecting him on skates anytime soon.
Jeff, you mentioned the NCAA leading goal scorer, Adam Gaudette, going to play his first game with the Canucks tomorrow. What are some realistic expectations, really, for him? And maybe should Canucks fans maybe holster some high expectations with regards to maybe his offensive prowess as he begins his pro career?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a terrific season at Northeastern and signed his contract after 3 years, comes out and was in town yesterday. They elected not to play him just to kind of let him be around the team, and he's skated a couple of times here. What he seems to be most excited about is people look at the numbers that he put up at the NCAA level. He wants to kind of spread his wings here and prove that, you know, he can grind in the NHL and that he plays with a bit of an edge, and that's one of the things that attracts the Canucks and their fan base. He was a fifth-round pick back in 2015, so at the time, you know, there was no fanfare, but he has improved steadily since then to the point that he's got this contract now and they're going to bring him in and give him these five games. You know, I think in some ways Brock Besser painted an unrealistic picture. Besser turned pro last year, scored four times in the nine games after his college career. And I just think a lot of the Canuck fans think, all right, well, here's another guy coming out of college. It's going to be a lot the same. Besser was always a scorer. He was a first-round pick and, you know, had that pro-level shot even in his college days. Gaudette is, you know, the prototypical 200-foot player, a guy that can play in all situations. And, you know, the comparisons out here are being made to Ryan Kessler. And, again, a lot of people are cautioning Canuck fans. Like, remember, not the 41-goal scorer that, you know, helped the Canucks get to the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final in 2011. You know, think back to a Ryan Kessler that also came out of college and started his career slowly before he built his way up into the Selke discussion and ultimately a Selke winner. You know, I'm not suggesting that that's where Gaudette is going, but that's the kind of player he'd like to be. I mean, he referenced Jonathan Toews and Patrice Bergeron and anybody that fashions themselves as a 200-foot player. You know, those are the guys in the league right now that you kind of look at. So curious to see, you know, and I'm also curious to see how the Canucks use him here with these five games to go. You know, if I'm Travis Green, I probably do test him in all situations, special teams, five-on-five, just to give him a sense of what he's getting himself into, but also to get a read on where he is and, you know, some of the things that he has to work on over the summer.
Jeff Patterson, our guest on NHL This Week. Jeff is with TSN 1040 in Vancouver. We're talking about the Canucks. Jeff, it was about 6 weeks ago now that the Canucks announced the contract extension for general manager Jim Benning. Coming up next segment, we're going to talk about a recent article in theathletic.com that says the window that new general managers have to improve their team has shrunk dramatically. It used to be, you know, a five-year plan. Now it's down to a two- or a three-year plan. Benning gets the contract extension. It's hard to say that there's been a ton of improvement to the Canucks under his watch. What's the level of consternation in Vancouver regarding the contract extension for Jim Benning?
Yeah, it was not a popular decision out here. Certainly many in the fan base that look at the record made the playoffs in his first year as general manager, but lost to Calgary as the higher seed, had home ice advantage. And, you know, a lot of that was on Willie DeJardin, got out coached by Bob Hartley back in the day when they were both behind the benches of those respective teams. And since then, you know, it's been progressively worse and worse year over year, to the point where, you know, a lot of people thought last year a 69-point season, it has to get better, and it's not going to for the Vancouver Canucks. And yes, there's been injuries to key players every year, but, you know, that also speaks to an organization that lacks depth to have some guys come up and plug holes. One of Jim Benning's, you know, I think one of the areas that people point to is his work in and around July 1st. Louis Erickson 2 summers ago, an absolute disaster. With 4 years left on that six-year, $36 million contract. And even go back to last July 1st, the Canucks were active, and you look at the signings, Sam Gagne has been a big disappointment, a three-year contract there. Michael Delzato has played every game, but you know, has kind of squeezed out some of the younger defensemen. A guy like Ben Hutton has found himself a healthy scratch because Delzato is here, and he's got another year left on his deal. Anders Nilsson has one win in his last 15 decisions as a goaltender who was signed to a two-year contract, hasn't provided the Canucks NHL goaltending. And then you get guys like Burmistrov, who walked away from the team. Anton Rodin walked away from the team as well. You know, the work in and around July 1st, the best free agent signing was Thomas Vanek, but that was done late in the summer when the team had doubled back and figured out that they were going to need some more goal-scoring help. So, you know, that's the concern here is, depending on what happens with Daniel and Henrik Sedin, the Canucks could have a bunch of money to play with, but I'm not sure that there's a confidence in this management group to go into the open market on July 1st again based on the track record. So, yeah, I think, you know, his work here, the best work he's done is at the draft, and particularly a little bit deeper in the draft, whether it was Besser 23rd overall or a guy like Gaudette, Thatcher Demko, the goaltender of the future, was a second-rounder. You know, it looks like Jim Benning, who was billed as, you know, a top talent evaluator and a scout, that's where he's done his best work. But what really frustrates the fan base here is a guy that has built this reputation as doing great work in the draft has traded away draft picks instead of accumulating draft picks. So you'd think a guy with that on his resume would want as many shots at the lottery as possible, and yet hasn't helped his own cause in that regard. So, look, it's been three dark years here, and I think next year is going to be another tough year. But, you know, again, you get back to a prospect pool that hasn't been in this organization in quite some time, led by Elias Pettersson, the fifth overall pick last year, along with Besser, along with Horvat. And, you know, there is some hope that some baby steps here and in a couple of years, this thing will at least get moving in the right direction.
Jeff, we're a hockey show in Winnipeg, so we have to ask you about Brendan Leipzig, who came over in the trade from the Vegas Golden Knights. How does he fit into this Canucks team, and what do you see his role as moving forward?
Yeah, he's part of the evaluation of a lot of young guys that are getting an opportunity. Unfortunately for him, he got belted in mid-ice in Chicago last week and hasn't been in the lineup since, led to believe that it's a neck or shoulder injury. Was skating, but then wasn't at practice today. They had an optional workout, and he wasn't part of it, so I don't know if there was a setback there. You know, this is a guy that has bounced around a little bit, still looking for an opportunity, couldn't crack that Vegas lineup on a regular basis, and so they made the deal, familiar with Travis Green from their days together in Portland, and he was brought in and given a great opportunity to play alongside Bo Horvat right away. In fact, on a line with Horvat, and Besser was in the lineup there for the first game or two after Leipzig came over in the deal. You know, he's a high-energy guy with a pretty decent skill level. But I think he's still also trying to find his way in the National Hockey League. And, you know, can he be a top six forward on a good team? That's probably a stretch. You know, he seems like a pretty creative guy. And again, the Canucks don't have a lot offensively right now, given the players that are out of the lineup. So it's if he can get back in here for any of these final five games, it continues to be an audition for him. But they're trying to amass skill and talent. And, you know, I think he has shown well when he's been in the lineup, scored an overtime goal in one of his first games here, had a couple of goals in that game. But, you know, it's not like he has solidified his spot as part of the top six or the top nine. You know, he's going to have to come back next year, camp, and prove himself all over again. And I think that's kind of been the case for him as an undersized guy in his NHL career. It's always about proving himself. So there have been some moments, but he's still got some work to do.
Jeff, keeping with youth, a guy Winnipeggers are somewhat familiar with is Tyler Mott. He was a line mate with rookie Kyle Connor at in the NCAA with the Michigan, along with JT Compher. He was known as the mini magician at Michigan. Have you seen any mini magic out of Tyler Mott in your limited sample size with him being on the Canucks as of yet?
I've seen the mini part. haven't seen a whole lot of magic. I don't know if he left the wand and the top hat back in Ann Arbor. Or maybe Columbus, where they got him from in the deadline. You know, he really hasn't made any kind of dent whatsoever. Has been used primarily in a checking role and as a penalty killer, and he's done some decent work there, but scored an empty net goal in Dallas the other day. That's his only offensive contribution. And, you know, again, this is a guy that, kind of like Leipzig, is getting an opportunity, but here he is, young player on his third franchise already, and hasn't been able to stick in other places, and there's a reason players like that are expendable. So, you know, I think I would have liked to have seen a little bit more from him, and the final five games here, an opportunity to make something happen. But really, the best I can say is that he's been fairly effective as a penalty killer. I think the Canucks have killed off 15 straight in their last five or six games, and he's been a part of that. But he also has to sit out two more games to retain his waiver eligibility for next season. They want to be able to send him down to Utica for a playoff run. The Comets clinched the spot last week. And so with five games to go, he's only going to play in three of them. And I would imagine one of those will be against Columbus. The Blue Jackets are in on Saturday, so he'll get a chance to play against his former team. But when I talk about, you know, an audition period with five to go and he's going to have to sit two, you know, time is ticking on what's left in his and the Canucks season.
Jeff, we'll let you go on this last question. This is obviously Travis Green's first year behind the bench of the Vancouver Canucks after having spent four seasons as the head coach in Utica. What grade would you give Travis Green for the job he's done this season as the Canucks bench boss?
I like a lot of what he has done, but ultimately when you're the 28th, 29th, who knows where they finish, place team, you know, he's going to have to wear that. And I think I like his system and his approach to the game, but injuries started early. Alex Edler, who they have absolutely leaned on, played over 30 minutes last night against Anaheim, went out in the third game of the season, got tangled up with Mark Scheifele, in fact, in Vancouver, and that started this snowball of injuries. And, you know, it's again, injuries are never an excuse, but they are part of the reason the Canucks are where they are. You know, and so it kind of comes back to this question of, you know, what was Scotty Bowman do with the roster that Travis Green has been forced to use for much of this season. When Horvat and Sutter and Berthiaume were out in the month of December, they had Brock Besser as the only guy that was scoring with any regularity. And, you know, even a couple of weeks ago, they went those three games in a row where they didn't score a goal. Offense has been an issue all season long. So, you know, some of the highlights are a power play that's been in the top 10 for most of the season. Travis Green and Newell Brown have been able to breathe some life into special teams that were non-existent a year ago. And I think you have to look at the development of individual players. And Brock Besser was brought along. Bo Horvat's had a kind of quietly nice season that was interrupted by a broken ankle, but a 20-goal season for a second year in a row. You know, then you get to the projects, guys like Jake Virtanen and other high draft picks that the Canucks absolutely need to pan out. You know, you can't waste picks at 6 and 5 and, you know, Virtanen went 6th overall. Ole Levy has yet to play in the NHL. He was the 5th overall pick. So, you know, Travis Green's been good to deal with from a media standpoint. Not that that reflects on the job that he does, but as a guy who's in his face on a daily basis, you know, I've enjoyed being around him and just talking hockey with him. I think overall, he's done a reasonable job given the assets available to him. But he and this organization, they've got a lot of work in front of them.
Jeff Patterson covers the Vancouver Canucks for our sister station, TSN 1040 in Vancouver. Jeff, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
When we come back, we're going to talk about that window of opportunity for general managers. Has it shortened now? Do you need results from a new GM in a shorter time frame than you used to? That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Canucks fans, I'm excited about the direction of our team. It hasn't been easy, but I'm confident we are on the right path. We are going to build this team back into a contender again.
That's current Canucks general manager Jim Benning. About 6 weeks ago, when he was given a contract extension by the Canucks organization and by team president Trevor Linden. I mentioned this article in that interview we just conducted with Jeff Patterson, that the window general managers, new general managers into the job have, is allegedly shrinking. That no longer do you get a 5-year window in which to rebuild the team. Rather, it's 3 years, maybe even less.
I think it's more like 2 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think you're necessarily wrong, Ezzy. It seems like because everything that happens in the NHL nowadays is designed to make bad teams better. Mm. You know, the salary cap, all the rules, the point is to not be able to
expansion draft.
Expansion draft. The point is to not be able to keep a good team, a super team, continue to be a dominant team. They don't want any
creates parity.
Yeah, they want parity. They don't want any dynasties. So when you have a general manager like Jim Benning in Vancouver, like Peter Chiarelli in Edmonton, who can't improve the team year after year after year, you certainly understand the frustration from the fan base as to why these guys end up getting contract extensions in Benning's case, why Chiarelli isn't, at least from the outsider's point of view, on an overwhelming hot seat. They're not waiting until, you know, Black Monday for the season to end to clear house. You can understand why a team or a fan base looks at the Vegas Golden Knights and looks at the job George McPhee did and have the Golden Knights winning the Pacific Division in year one and say, why is that? Why can't that be my team? Why have the Carolina Hurricanes missed the playoffs for the last 10 years?
I think it starts with drafting. And if you want to stick with the Vancouver Canucks and our interview with Jeff Patterson, I mean, your reason for optimism starts with Brock Besser, and then it continues with a couple of fifth overall draft picks, right? Ole Ualevi, who was drafted three spots after Patrick Laine, and then Elias Pettersson, who was drafted fifth overall at the past draft there in Chicago. And those two players are going to factor in big time. And then the Vancouver Canucks also have an opportunity to get a fifth or higher pick in this year's draft. I mean, it might be number one. It might be number two. Maybe it's going to be lower, and maybe they actually drop down. But
that'd be amazing.
You have to draft well. And, you know, the Vancouver Canucks have nailed some picks as of late. And, you know, we could argue back and forth about a player like Jake Virtanen, but he's only 21 years old. So you can't say that he's a flop at this point. At least,
it's getting close. It's closer than it was. It's getting closer that where they took Virtanen and the guys they passed up to take Virtanen.
Sure, but the point is that, you know, Brock Besser was drafted 25th overall.
And they nailed Besser.
So they nailed that one. Yeah. Elias Pettersson has been over a point a game in the Swedish league, and he's most likely going to play in the NHL next year. Mm-hmm. Ole Ualevi is most likely going to play in the NHL next year. He's been playing with Utica in the American Hockey League. Thatcher Demko is a really good goaltender. Back to your point, though, Drew, about general managers not having as much time maybe as they used to have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, another great example is what Ray Shiro did in New Jersey. And you look at the Taylor Hall trade.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a top 10 left winger, maybe top 5 left winger.
Yeah.
He trades for Sami Vatanen. He has to give up Adam Henrique. So he deals from a position of strength to get a defenseman. And Sami Vatanen has been a great top 4 defenseman for the Devils. He's made them quicker. They also got the first overall pick.
Sure.
And the common theme here, guys, is in the expansion draft, I mean, let's be honest, this wasn't your typical expansion draft. This wasn't 2000 or 2001 Columbus Blue Jackets or Minnesota Wild. The Vegas Golden Knights were allowed to take a lot of good players.
Right.
Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, Riley Smith, Alex Tuck, James Neal, David Perron, you can go on and on and on. In previous expansion drafts, 15 to 20 years ago, you wouldn't get those types of players. So really, they were allowed to come into the league with a pretty darn good team, right? But when you look at what some of those other general managers have done, I mean, they've turned their teams around pretty quickly. And Carolina is another example. They haven't drafted well. Sure, you have a lot of good prospects in the system, but do you have any A prospects? I don't know if you do.
You certainly don't have any A prospects up front. And so the prospects that they continued to draft were on the back end, and everyone thought that the offense would come from somewhere, but that offense hasn't materialized.
Andrew,
and Ron Francis is no longer the GM there now.
And sorry to interrupt you, but another thing is you have to manage those assets and develop those assets. And Scott Darling, perfect example. And again, I don't want to put this all on Scott Darling or the decision to sign Scott Darling, trade for Scott Darling.
He's been off.
But he hasn't been the number one goaltender that they've needed. Cam Ward has had to step in there and play the majority of starts here down the stretch, and the Hurricanes are going to miss the playoffs again for whatever it is, the 10th year in a row. So, I mean, you have to be able to show that you're turning things around. If you've missed the playoffs for 2 years in a row, you better make the playoffs in the third year.
You have to show quicker. I mean, the Jets, Kevin Cheveldayoff are maybe the last example of a team that has that should demonstrate that amount of patience. I mean, the fact that, Cheveldayoff is now into his, seventh, eighth year as GM. Mm-hmm. This is only the second time the Jets made the playoffs. If this was, I mean, I understand the frustration in Vancouver where you see Jim Benning get this contract extension. You say, if you're a fan, what has he done to deserve it? Where's the plan? At least Cheveldayoff put forth a plan or spoke about a plan and got buy-in on the plan. Jim Benning just seems to be running around in circles like a chicken without his head off. One second doing, making a trade. One second signing a guy to a bad contract. One second flopping a top five draft pick. And then one second nailing a late first round draft pick. So you have to say, where's the plan? Where's the strategy? And if you're a general manager who doesn't articulate that and doesn't demonstrate that, I can understand the frustration from a fan base and why your window might go from 5 years to the 2 or 3 years that it seems to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, we here in Winnipeg, it's such a unique situation because management came out right away, right, and said, we believe in Kevin Cheveldayoff, we believe in his plan, we believe in Paul Maurice, and kind of provided that certainty that they aren't going anywhere and that this plan is into fruition. And now we're starting to see every first round. Think about every first round draft pick that the Jets have had thus far and where they are right now in that lineup and the development each one of them has taken and the steps that they have taken to get to where they are right now. Sending guys back to college, putting guys in the minors, learning how to make mistakes on the fly for some of them. And now we see some of the talent that's developed, and you see what management was talking about those prior years. And if you can't see the results, and you can't see, and you talked about hitting first round draft picks. I liked what what Jeff said about hitting on those top five, those top prospects. I mean, yeah, there's no wonder that the fan base is so eager to turn on a general manager and show their displeasure.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Josh Cooper. We'll talk about some of the California-based NHL teams. Talk to Josh about the playoff stretch drive. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got you covered. They got the big screen TVs. They got great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's.
There's only one guest that we can have, though, can wrap up this Wednesday edition of the show, and that's our good friend. He's living the high life out in La La Land. Josh Cooper joins us now. Joshua, how are things?
They're great. Ari found love with Lauren B.
Right.
On The Bachelor. So, you know, props to him. And things are good. My kid's asleep right now. Which is fantastic, and I'm on hashtag Legal Curve after hours.
Yes, that's all we ever wanted from you, Josh. Obviously brought you on to talk a little hockey. There's no current Bachelor season as far as I know, so we might have to leave that to the back burner until...
It will be back, Drew.
Okay, well, when it's back...
It always comes back.
I know
back.
It always comes back. It's, you know, when it comes back, we'll certainly discuss that accordingly with Josh, but...
Well...
Yo, go ahead.
It was the Bachelor Winter Games this year, which included two people from Bachelor Canada. So that was really interesting. And I thought one guy even had a mullet.
There's a Bachelor Canada?
You're going to go as cliche as humanly possible.
I didn't even know there was a Bachelor Canada. I'm obviously out of the loop.
It's very polite.
It's very polite, Bachelor Canada. It's not nearly as controversial.
No, Drew, just stick to your HQ game.
Thank you. Yes, exactly. Do you play HQ trivia, Josh?
What?
Do you play HQ trivia?
What is HQ Trivia?
It's the online game show. You play it on your phone, and it's a trivia game show. You can win cash prizes. They gave away $250,000 tonight. My wife and I do it as a bonding moment. I think you and your wife should start doing it as well. Ezzy and his wife are going to start playing as well. Just go.
You know, if it involves making money, sure.
Go to the app store. Just search for HQ Trivia. You'll find out. It'll change your world.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's what I'm here for, Josh. Why don't we talk a little hockey? You know, it is allegedly a hockey show. You know, you're out in Los Angeles. You've spent some time covering the Kings. And earlier on the program, we were talking about the Hart Trophy battle and the Hart Trophy nomination. And does Connor McDavid deserve a nomination given his incredible season, but given how terrible the Oilers have been, does that disqualify him? You cover a guy named Anze Kopitar, and you've watched him up close and personal for a lot this season. You know, he's a name that strikes out to me that he could be in the running as one of those three nominees for the Hart Trophy at the end of the season.
You know, it's interesting that you bring him up, only because even before he really, in my opinion, and I mean, I had watched him a lot before I did my stint covering for John Rosen and LA Kings Insider, but during that stretch, he just was the best player in essentially every game I saw except one, which was when they lost 7-3 against Carolina. I think it was 7-3 or 7-2. Either way, they lost by a lot. But, I mean, in my opinion, he was the best player in pretty much every game I covered for the Kings except one. And it has to do with so many factors. It has to do with the fact that offensively he's just dynamic, and he's putting up offensive numbers despite the fact, and I don't even think despite's the right word because that almost has a negative connotation, but even though he's playing an incredible amount of defense as well, and I don't think any player in the NHL can put up that type of offense while he has that much defensive responsibility that the coach heaps on him. He wins faceoffs. He's an efficient hockey player. His shooting percentage is incredibly high this year. He just does everything incredibly well. And it's funny because I was doing a thing for the Kings website just basically on why he's so important and why he's so valuable. And when you look at the depth and breadth of his actual stats, it's not like he's essentially, you know, like the top guy in 10 different stats or whatever. That's not him. But he's essentially in the top 10 or top 15 in every statistical category or most meaningful statistical categories for both offense and defense, or how we measure that in a hockey player. And I don't think any other player, at least forward this year, has reached that level. And he's just so incredibly good and is playing at such an unbelievably high level this year. I mean, I honestly can't remember watching a player play the way he has at the level he has on both ends of the rink. Over the entirety of the season, the consistency has been unreal. So, I mean, in my opinion, it's not just because I'm around the Kings the most or the fact that I do work for them. I mean, he is, to me, the most valuable player in the National Hockey League this year just because he has been just so good all over the ice.
Josh, sticking with the LA Kings, the LA Kings are tied with the St. Louis Blues and the Anaheim Ducks right now. All three teams have 91 points. The St. Louis Blues have one game in hand on the Kings. But if you're the Kings right now, you're currently scheduled to play the San Jose Sharks in the first round. Do you want to stay in that spot, or do you possibly want to move into that wild card spot and have the opportunity to play Vegas?
You know, at the end of the day, I don't think it matters a whole lot. I think that just essentially you have to beat the team that's in front of you regardless of who it is. I mean, look, I remember last year when I was working for Yahoo Sports, I did the first round preview for the Predators versus the Chicago Blackhawks, and I think I had the Blackhawks winning in five. So I went up and down their roster, and I said, oh, that's a terrible matchup for Nashville. There's no way they can beat Chicago. And then and look what happens. So, I mean, people are saying that that Vegas is the team you want just because they don't have a superstar. I mean, they do have a guy that just hit the 40-goal mark, William Karlsson. You know, there's a lot of kind of matching up and sort of thoughts about who, about what, you know, which teams that a team should play. At the end of the day, I mean, if you're playing really well, you should win your first-round matchup. And then basically from there on, everything just sort of goes as either it's supposed to go or not supposed to go. So I think that with the Kings, I mean, yeah, the Sharks are playing incredibly well down the stretch. That Evander Kane trade was truly a big shot in the arm for them. Plus, they don't have Joe Thornton in the lineup, and when they get him back, I'm sure that'll add just another layer of depth for them. But overall, I mean, especially in the NHL with the way the salary cap is set up and the parity in the league, I don't think it really matters who you play in the first round. You just always have to beat the team that's in front of you. And I think if there's one thing the Kings, at least historically speaking, on some of their runs, that they understand is that that's just what you have to do. I mean, I remember the year when they were the eighth seed and they won the Stanley Cup. I mean, they were beating teams that were supposedly better than them up until basically the last two rounds when they played Arizona and then New Jersey, both teams that that weren't, I guess, were better than them in regards to points, but overall just weren't playing as well. So I think that for them, they just need to get their game in order, and I think that if they do make the playoffs, go in playing at a high level, and then if their game's in order, then in my opinion, I do think this team has the depth and overall just ability to win at least a round, if not more.
Josh, back on March 20th, the Kings were in Winnipeg, a 2-1 overtime loss, but one player that was unbelievable in that game was backup goaltender Jack Campbell. He made 36, stopped 36 of 38. He was .947 save percentage. He was absolutely pummeled with shots throughout that game. Not a young guy, 26 years of age. Where does he stand in the Kings organization?
Well, they had Darcy Kemper earlier in the year, and essentially Jack Campbell enabled them to trade Darcy Kemper as a backup goaltender. In which the Kings got Tobias Reeder because Campbell had played so well in the minors, and they just kind of said, you know what, it's his term, let's give him a shot. And that athleticism is just excellent. I think you guys saw that during that game. And you know, a guy who, as you mentioned, is a little bit older, but someone who was a first-round draft pick of the Dallas Stars, I'm not sure if it's 2010 or 2011.
Yeah, 2010.
But, has been around a little bit. And overall, is a very highly skilled goaltender, but simply hasn't been able to put it all together. And I think that with the Kings organization, he has figured out just how to be at least an NHL backup goaltender and come in on select games and play really well. I mean, that wasn't the first time he had come in and played just excellent hockey. He did the same thing against the Vegas Golden Knights, I think it was in late February. So Jack Campbell, to me, is a guy who it gives them certainly an option as a backup, but at the same time, I think looking down the rest of the way, I'm not sure how much the Kings are going to use him just because they need Jonathan Quick for the stretch run. So, but, I mean, Jack Campbell certainly a guy that, if called upon, I think can give them some solid goaltending, no question. He really has proven himself.
Josh Cooper, our guest on NHL this week, we're talking about the league in general, some of the California-based teams. Josh, the Anaheim Ducks, have 35 regulation and overtime wins this season. They got another four wins in a shootout. That's certainly the fewest number of wins of any team currently residing in a playoff spot in the Western Conference. We saw them here in Winnipeg last week in a game that they were tremendously fortunate to get 1 point out of, for the game to have gone to extra time where they ended up losing. And it was by smoke and mirrors that they even got that 1 point. Are the Anaheim Ducks, despite being in a playoff spot right now, maybe not quite as good as people think that they might be?
I wouldn't say that, only because they have Ryan Getzlaf, who to me is maybe one of the most underrated players of the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, however many years he's kind of taken off as being an elite player in the NHL. I mean, yes, he had a Hart Trophy nod 1 year, but he's just so good. The way he plays, how he could, he's one of the few guys in the NHL, and I mentioned Kopitar earlier being another one, but he's one of the few guys in the NHL who can literally take over an entire game just because he's such a matchup nightmare in every shift. Just that shot, the way he sees the ice, the way he makes absolutely everybody better around him. And not just that, I mean, they do have some really good players. I mean, Adam Henrique has been a very solid addition for them. Their defense is incredibly deep. John Gibson has played very well for them. I don't think that they're not as good as what people think they are. I mean, personally, I do think they're a playoff team, but I think what we are seeing potentially is just this is kind of the end of that sort of run, so to speak, where, I mean, they have made the Western Conference final twice in the last 3 years. They're a team that has played an incredible amount of hockey over that stretch just because of those two Western Conference final runs, but I mean, they are getting somewhat long in the tooth. I mean, Ryan Kesler had a very, very, I guess, had a big procedure on a tip in the offseason, which involved a lot of rigorous rehab. Corey Perry is a little bit older. And again, Getzlaf, as good as he is, he's also in his early 30s and pushing into his mid 30s as all those other guys are. So, overall, I think that, we're seeing kind of the end of that run, so to speak, which is why you're seeing a little less consistency out of them. But I still don't think that makes them any less dangerous, just because when you have that urgency, when you know that it's kind of coming to a close, it really forces you to pick up your game. And I think that's sort of where they are right now.
Josh, last question for you here. With Connor McDavid currently doing what he's doing, basically getting 2 or 3 points every single night, has he earned your vote for the Hart Trophy, or does he not get your vote because Edmonton is missing the playoffs?
Well, I don't have a vote, and the Kings pay me, so I'm going to vote for Andrei Kopitar. no, I'm kidding. no, but if I technically I don't have a vote. And also, actually, do work for the San Diego Gulls, so the Ducks pay me too. In all sincerity, when I look at Connor McDavid and what he's done, has he been the best player in the NHL this year? I mean, sure, offensively, I think you can make a case for him. I think that just overall, the amount of scoring he's done over this last month has been tremendous. But, I mean, you do have to sort of take a step back and kind of think, okay, you know, what do the Oilers have to play for? Are they just basically trying to get McDavid the scoring title and just get him the puck as much as possible? I don't think so. I think there's more honor than that. And more substance to their game. But, I mean, who knows at this stage? I mean, it truly is something that, I mean, the fans are probably really excited about and that they probably want for him in Edmonton. I mean, it certainly is a goal that you can strive for as a team to get your captain the scoring title. But I don't know. I mean, he's certainly the most talented offensive player in the NHL. The numbers he's putting up are incredible. The way he's played this month has been amazing, and the Oilers have been excellent as well. So, but at the same time, they're not going to make the playoffs, and I don't know if you can give the MVP to a player. At least in my opinion, when I was a voter, I didn't. You know, I definitely never gave much credence to, a first place vote to a player for either the Norris or the Hart Trophy, whose team didn't make the playoffs. So, personally, if I was voting, I wouldn't have him number one. I'd maybe have him in my top five just because the offensive numbers are super hard to ignore. But I'll say this again, and it has nothing to do with my status working with the Kings or anything. I mean, I think Andrei Kopitar, every single game I have seen live this year, where he has gone head-to-head with whatever the matchup is, and that includes two games against Edmonton. He has been the best player, in my opinion. Except that one game against Carolina. He wasn't that, but neither was the entire team. They didn't play very well. I think they allowed 7 goals. So I based on just what I've seen and how I've watched the game and all the games I've seen this year, I mean, he has been the best player on the ice every single game that I've watched except that one.
Josh, we'll let you go back to listening to Hall & Oates now.
thank you. Did you like the picture?
That was a great pick.
And they retweeted it?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, they retweeted it. Yeah, I got to give my wife's first cousin and his wife props for that outfit. It was pretty cool. But, yeah, you know, it was funny because they don't have a ton of followers, and I realized why. It's because probably Daryl Hall and John Oates have more followers by themselves than what the actual account does, because it's not like if Hall and Oates, the account, retweets you, you're getting retweeted by either Hall or Oates. You're just getting retweeted by, like, someone who runs the account. So it was cool, but not as cool as it should have been.
Well, I really got nothing.
Great band.
You don't listen
to Hall & Oates, Drew?
I listen to Hall & Oates. I mean, I don't listen to that much music, Ezzy. I'm too busy playing HQ Trivia all the time. I'm too busy, you know, trying to win money in some sort of shady online video game that I highly recommend for you there, Joshua. But we're going to let you go on that note because we got about another 7 minutes or so. We got to get a break in here in between. So always good talking to you, good sir.
Always great, and I really enjoyed seeing you guys last month. It was truly one of the highlights of my road trip.
Well, we hope to see you again real soon there, Josh.
Hope so, too. Take care, guys.
Likewise, say hi to the family. Josh Cooper joining us on the program. When we come back, we'll look at the out-of-town scoreboard. We'll look at the Eastern and Western Conference standings.
Download some Hall & Oates, Drew.
Okay, we can download some Hall & Oates while we're going to break as well. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment as we approach the hour of midnight.
This is going to be a nice short segment.
It will be a short segment.
And then it's going to be bedtime for this guy.
Then it'll be bedtime for Ezzy. You're going to make it home or you're just going to curl up in the corner here?
Yeah, I'm just going to fall asleep under the desk.
There you go. Sounds about right. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. All this week at Rumors, Kellen Erskine is in town. You may have seen him on Conan O'Brien. You may have seen him on America's Got Talent. If you want to see him, though, you better get your tickets now because he's playing before sold-out shows. Sold-out show tonight. Sold-out show last night. And I have it on very good authority that there's only a limited number of tickets available for the shows coming up tomorrow and this weekend. So get them quickly. RumorsComedyClub.com. And while you're there, check out all the great acts coming to Rumors.
I know we only have like 1 or 2 minutes, but yes. You know, talking about the games tonight, can Arizona stop winning? Why are they winning games now?
I don't know. They beat the Golden Knights tonight by a 3-2 margin, which is certainly unexpected to go into Vegas and to defeat the Golden Knights.
That sum up the year, though, Drew?
Unexpected?
Like, you expect Vegas, okay, they're playing Arizona, one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah.
Vegas is lights out at home, and then Arizona beats them 3-2.
As our buddy Rick Ralph has been documenting, the Coyotes have been playing better hockey over the last 6 or 8 weeks, but they still are certainly one of the bottom teams in the NHL.
But my point, though, Drew, is you just want to increase your lottery odds at this point. So why are you bothering trying to win games, is my
Players
point.
Don't know how to tank. You know that. We've had this conversation ad nauseum. Organizations try and tank. Players try and win games, and they play for pride, and obviously their pride won out over the Golden Knights' pride.
They got to watch what Buffalo and Ottawa are doing.
Well,
when was the last time either one of those teams won a game?
They need to get tanking lessons from the Sabres and the Senators.
Buffalo won their last game, by the way. They beat Toronto.
Well, there you go. Clearly, the research has been impeccable tonight on the program. Also on the out-of-town scoreboard, a bad loss for the Colorado Avalanche. They lose 2-1 at home to the Philadelphia Flyers. So they miss an opportunity to leapfrog the Ducks, the Blues, and the Kings in the standings. They're now out of the playoff race. Right now, a point behind those teams. The Blues
still be very close to clinching, by the way.
The Blues have one game in hand on the Ducks, the Avalanche, and the Kings. So a big loss by the Avalanche, but a big win for the Flyers, as you mentioned, as they move into a tie with the Pittsburgh Penguins for second in the Metropolitan Division.
Like we all predicted.
As we all predicted, undoubtedly. The Penguins with a game in hand still, but a big win for the Philadelphia Flyers because the Blue Jackets were making some headway, and a bad loss tonight by the Panthers. Not a bad loss, but a tough loss tonight by the Panthers, losing 4-3 to the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's it for this Wednesday night, late night edition of NHL This Week. Big thanks to our guests, Curtis Pashelka, Jeff Patterson, and Josh Cooper. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on TSN1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Get it sent straight to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jersey. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Chris Curry behind the board doing a great job. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday morning at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.